You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers for Tuesday, January 22nd. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at fearthestore.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review, particularly on Apple Podcasts, is the best way to support the show. And you can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. On today's show, we are going to get into the Cavs' 104-88 loss to the Chicago Bulls. A loss that puts them a full 2.5 games behind the Bulls in the standings. Or if you want to look at it in a draft way, on the tankathon view, they are now the worst team in the league by 2.5 points, further cementing their place in the bottom three of the lottery. We'll also look at Jedi Osman and what he's been in the last week for a weekly check-in on the Cavs' Turkish swingman. But we're going to start with the good from the Bulls game. We're going to start in the humorous aspect of this because I think with how disappointing the season has been for the team, how morbid I think it feels around them right now. To be in that locker right now is not a fun place. Guys are getting out of there. The arena, granted this was a 1 p.m. tip, but not a fun arena to be in either for as far as NBA games go. My first positive here is that Channing Frye in the second half for a stretch just had his way with Jabari Parker. Faked him out with a step back three, drove by him, pop threes on him. Channing just did whatever he wanted against Jabari, who's much younger than him, much more explosive than him, probably stronger than him. And it was just kind of really fun for Channing, who I don't know if he necessarily signed up for what he's been put into, but just for the 19 minutes he played, for him to go out there and to just do what he did to Jabari was just kind of fun to watch. And on that same note, Campaign, who is on a 10-day deal with the Cavs, his second 10-day deal, could theoretically be coming close to the end of his Cavaliers tenure, played for the Bulls before the Cavs. They unceremoniously let him go, and they punted on him. He was a bit salty about this, I think. You'll hear from him in the segue from part one to part two of this podcast when we take our first break today, but twice in this game, I was watching him, and he made shots on these two possessions, if not directly back-to-back, within a minute or so of each other in the second half. So Campaign makes his three the first one. He stares at the Bulls bench for a second, just glares over there. And then after he makes a two in the second quarter, this was the first half, so he makes this other shot, and he basically just is glaring back at the bench again. I don't think he, hates those guys by any means. I don't think it's, fully malicious, but it was just really fun to see Campaign, who is just hanging on to an NBA career right now, who could be done with the Cavs in short order here, and has had some very up-and-down moments for this team, just have a really solid performance against his old team and just kind of do something right for him. You know, 4 of 11 from the field isn't great. The three-point shooting isn't great. But for him to have that 11 points, to hustle as hard as he did, and to get those little moments against the Bulls, his former team, who, again, cut him so unceremoniously, I am very here for that. So in real basketball stuff, Jetty, I thought, we'll talk about more about this later and why structurally him having to defend Lauri Markkanen is a problem. But it went better than I thought it would. So Markkanen in the first half goes 2 of 7 from the field. Jetty did a really good job of hounding him. Markkanen finishes the game 5 of 11 from the field. And while I do not necessarily think that the shots that he made or these pop-open threes were totally not on Jetty, I don't think they were sort of a structural problem as well. And that is not in itself a great thing. If you look at the way Jetty was having to defend a guy who is a couple inches taller than him, who just looks more muscular than him, That is really interesting. And it was really interesting to see how Jetty was really able to combat that, really able to kind of push his body weight up against Markkanen. And we had as I record this, the NBA's matchup stats are not up yet in their box score. So I cannot tell you what exactly he shot against Jetty to sort of verify this. And that will sort of paint a more data-driven picture here. But Jetty, I thought, and was not too eager in defending Markkanen. He did not commit any dumb fouls. And I think what you're seeing is a player learning from having to guard bigger guys. He's in the last three games, it's been Derek Favors, who's much bigger than him against the Jazz, then Paul Millsap, who is much bigger than him, who Tristan Thompson has historically defended when the Cavs have faced a Paul Millsap featured team in the last couple of years. And then he defends Lauri Markkanen, who's like 6'11 and is much more cut than him. Good job for Jetty. No dumb fouls against Markkanen. Was just kind of impressed by something I didn't think would go that well. Ante Zizic, I thought, had a good game again. He moved his feet well in defense. He had a couple instances where guards would cut across his body to try to beat him to his opposite hip, where they thought he might not be able to move quite as quick. And he did a good job sliding his feet, getting there, and contesting the shot. He continues to show that nice touch around the rim. And I like that they also ran a couple sets to let him flash, and or if you're sort of pop into the middle of the paint, to let him get the ball and make a play, to shoot, to pass, to do something. I like that look for Zizic. He has that ability to be a face-up center from the elbows and in. It'd be really interesting to see if he could pop out just a little bit farther and expand that range. But I like that not only that he's playing and looks healthy, but is getting a chance to do some stuff. And for him, 9 boards as well in a 13.9 board game coming off his first career double-double. So good stuff from Ante here. 29 free throws is good as well for the Cavs, something that they did a decent job of. Less fewer turnovers than the Bulls is another positive. But that's functionally about all the positives you can say about this game. I thought Jaron Blossom game hustled. Again, I thought Payne hustled. I liked what Channing did off the bench. All that holds true. And I liked how Colin came out in the first quarter and was making shots when the offense was bad. That was good for him to get out there, including hitting in a three in this game as well. A spot-up three from the corner. I like that. But they're really bad. They lost to the Bulls, who came into this game with the worst offense in the NBA and were down by as many as 21 in this game. You cannot have that many positives when you lose like that to a team that is that bad. So we're going to take our first break and then come back to get into the muck of this game. But first, hear from Campaign talking post-game about what he was going through his head when he faced his old team today. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers.
Facing a team that you're away from, a lot of emotions could have gone into this game. How do you feel like you handled it?
I felt like I handled it well. I mean, that whole group is great competitors, and I like competing too, so I felt like it was just fun.
Coach said that he texted you and said he wishes you the best of luck, not to shoot too many threes, but saw so much of what you can contribute as far as being a playmaker for this team.
Yeah, he did. He definitely gave me that text, and I appreciate it. I mean, as a coach, you know, saying you don't have to say anything, but the fact he went out his way to text me, it really meant a lot.
All right, there you heard from one Cameron Payne. So, to look at the bad from the Cavs' loss to the Bulls again, they lose 104-88 Monday on Martin Luther King Day. The offense in the first quarter was horrendous. So, 8 of 23 from the field in that quarter. Five turnovers, did not take a free throw, did not make a bucket for a little over five minutes into the game. Everything was predictable. Everything was cramped. Everything was not really flowing that well. Basically, with Kyle Collins-Sexton making some tough shots, like it was basically hoping Alec Burks was going to make a tough shot, or Rodney Hood was going to wake up and make a tough shot. And he continues to just be overall just invisible on this team. And you wonder really what he's going to get paid in the summer when he's shooting 1 of 8 from the field for a team this bad. I think for me, this first quarter and how bad that offense looked, how tight it looked, where there wasn't a ton of really stuff to kind of beat out some of their bad habits. To me, it's an encapsulation of both what is lacking on the roster, that it is missing Kevin Love, that there's no Tristan, no Nance, no Nwaba. There's not a lot of shooting and guys that like to shoot threes on this roster. that's 100% a problem. And it's also a problem that the scheme just isn't that good. It is hard to run a better scheme, I would say, when you don't have the talent to really make that scheme flow. When your starting lineup in a game at this point in the season is Colin Sexton, Alec Burks, Rodney Hood, Ante Zizic, and Jedi Osman, it's really hard to construct a good offense there. It might be impossible. It probably is impossible. What would a Quinn Snyder or someone who designs a good offense do with this? I can't imagine they're going to come up with anything much better. When Jordan Clarkson is maybe the guy on the team that is best at creating his own shot, it's either him or Burks. I don't know what to tell you. Kevin Love is going to raise the floor on this a little bit. He's going to make them a little bit better. He is going to, in theory, give them some structure that I think is sorely, sorely needed. But until he's back, until they have him playing actual basketball again, and he is around the team all the time now. He was at this game in a suit, but on the bench. I just don't think the offense is going to be much better. It's going to have quarters where they make shots and Alec Burks gets hot or Clarkson gets hot and they string together some points and it's going to feel a little bit better, but it's not going to be better. When Delly Runners was like the best play of the second quarter for a stretch, like that tells you something. When it's relying on Colin Sexton leading the offense as a rookie when he's really struggled and needs some time to grow, that doesn't help. I can't tell you who, it might have been Greg Schwartz from Bleach Report to tweet this out, but someone made the analogy that Colin Sexton is like a rookie quarterback playing behind a bad offensive line, and like that to me feels very apt for what kind of position the Cavs have really put him in. It's just a bad, bad offense. So Jordan Clarkson in this game to me was also an issue. He comes out and has three really silly turnovers in the first half. Just turnovers that were him being reckless. And then later in the half, they're going for a two-for-one. He's trying to get them back in the game, and I give him credit for pushing. It was the right play to push. But he gets up to the right wing, and he takes a very quick three-pointer that I'm not sure was a smart shot. He rushes it. He bricks it. Absolutely. If he makes it, I'm looking at this differently. It is a make-or-miss league, but you saw a player who just 100% rushed this shot, who didn't need to do that. He could have just waited a split second, better gathered himself, maybe taken a 5 extra seconds and still got the 2-for-1 and not taken that kind of look. Just Jordan Clarkson is being asked to do a lot. He's being asked to come in and be a microwave for 20, 25 minutes a game. He is the primary shot creator, I know. And Tim and Alec Burks being asked to do way too much for what they're really good at. It's why some of their stat lines just look so bad and why it's tough for them to kind of find any traction. But Jordan is just, he has to play just a little bit smarter. I liked in recent weeks when you've seen him coming off of screens, coming around screens, cutting a little bit more before they get him the ball and just basically ask him to make a shot from there. They're not asking him to dribble, attack out of the pick and roll. Those, I think he's just much better when you simplify the game for him a little bit. And when he gets to lean into this recklessness of his game, it does not work. And I thought this game for him was an encapsulation of that. And the 0-for-5 number from 3 for him is pretty brutal. The Cavs have a math problem in this game. So the Bulls shot incredibly well from 3, and that's a big reason why the Cavs lost this game. So a 15-6 advantage in terms of made three-pointers for Chicago against Cleveland. That's 9 more three-pointers. The Bulls took 30 as opposed to the Cavs 27. That is just a astronomical difference. If you're looking at a 9-3 advantage, that's a 27-point advantage that the Bulls get in a game that they won by 16 points. Obviously, the three-pointers are not the only reason the Cavs lost, but when the Bulls just have that big of a math advantage, and granted, they shot much better in this game than they did, and Bobby Portis making 3 threes, and Parker making 2 threes is like sort of an anomaly for what it is, but they lost Lauri Markkanen twice, and he stuck 2 wide-open threes, and that kind of stuff adds up. And when the Cavs are a team that does not like to shoot threes, and they don't have players that are good at shooting threes, that's a problem. If you look down the roster today, this is just the three-point stat line. Jetty, 1-4 from 3. That's kind of standard for him. It's an inconsistent shot for him, but okay. Zizic obviously took 0. Sexton was 2-6. He looks more, he's more eager to take them now, but it's not something he has down yet. I think it's a strength issue. Burks, weirdly, took 0. Rodney Hood missed both of his. Channing comes in, hits two. That's his value here. He makes two of two. Dengadel played 6 minutes. Did not take a three or take a shot. Jaron Blossom game, not a shooter. Had some nice offensive boards and made an impact, but not a three-point shooter. Campaign, 5 threes, only makes one. Deli missed all three of his threes. Some of that could be he's, you know, maybe not fully healthy. The situation's not great for him. He's being asked to basically shoot over the top of longer defenders. Okay, I'm not surprised he missed all three. And Clarkson, as we said before, missed all five. The Cavs just have a roster that is not really optimized to shoot threes. They are actually in the upper half of the league in three-point percentage. In my 2-for-1 article that I wrote for The Sword, I noted that, and I find that very weird, but they're near the bottom of the league in terms of their willingness to actually take threes. Their defense is, overly bad. Giving up 104 points to the worst offense in the league just tells you how disastrous the defense is, and I don't want to touch on that again because it's just a fact of life, like taxes, like that you need water, that a good night of sleep is good for you, that the Cavs defense is just an abomination. But they are 27th in attempts coming into this game. I think if they just, that math issue is less of a thing, it's a winnable game. They got close certain times and the Bulls responded by making threes. When the Cavs couldn't do that, there was no way for them to respond. And lastly, I just think not being able to capitalize off turnovers really did hurt the Cavs. The Bulls had 18 turnovers as opposed to the Cavs 14, but the Cavs only got 16 points off of those. The Bulls got 18 off the Cavs 14. That is a bit of execution. That is a bit of some luck there as well. I have not looked at the full stats there in terms of cleaning the glass, advanced stats, or just kind of the full breakdown of those situations there. But just not being able to take advantage of those in a game that, again, was winnable where the margin of error is so thin for the Cavs, where they're coming out and basically playing from behind because of how bad their defense is, that's a problem. And in overall context, just looking at this game, what will really tell you here of what the issue is, points per possession, the Cavs are in the 5th percentile. The Bulls were much, much better in the 45th percentile. Not good, but better. And the Cavs had a effective field goal percentage in the first percentile at 39.1%, according to Clean the Glass. So a disastrous offensive game, bad defensive game. They were in the first percentile in half-court offense in this game. A little better in transition, but again, just not a good offensive performance from the Cavs, who were dusted offensively by the worst offense in the NBA. And maybe that just means the Cavs are the worst at everything right now. And that's not a good place to be. It's not fun either. So you're going to hear now from Larry Drew talking about Jetty Osman, who I asked Larry about what it means that Jetty's playing up a position, basically in defense right now, and then we're going to be back to talk about Jetty specifically. But so stay tuned for that for more Locked On Cavaliers.
Chris Manning, SB Nation. Coach, Jetty's guarded Derek Favors and then Paul Millsap and then Markkanen tonight. How do you feel like he's doing guarding bigger guys, guys that are just size-wise?
You know, in to all honesty, I don't think it's fair to Jetty what we're asking him to do. He's guarding guys much bigger, much stronger. We haven't planned the four spot, which he's got to play at this particular point until we get until we get Biggs back. But I think he's giving the best he can. I think he's competing against these guys, but he's given up a lot size wise. He's given up a lot strength wise. But just given what our situation is as far as Biggs are concerned, we have to play him at the four spot. I think he's competing. And as I said, I don't think it's fair to him, but just given what our situation is as far as personnel. And particularly with our bigs, both Tristan being out, both Larry being out, and then Nwaba as well, who plays the four spot. He gives up a lot size wise. He gives up strength wise, but I think he's competing, and that's all we can ask of.
And we are back. Okay, so as you heard me ask in that question to Coach Larry Drew, Jetty has guarded bigger guys a lot. It's been a thing basically since David Nwaba has been out, which feels like it's been a very, very long time since David Nwaba has been on the court. I think that it'd be really good if Jetty could stop having to guard bigger guys. Jetty is 6'8 and 215. He is a bigger human being than the average NBA, the average human being, right? Like, he is just bigger. But he's not a particularly, like, built guy. He, at age 23, is very lean. He's not, I don't think, a particularly strong or physical player. He's gotten better at finishing through contact, but Jetty doesn't have the strength to really body up bigger, stronger guys right now. I don't know enough about how defensive RPM is calculated, but Jetty's near the bottom of the league in that stat, and it tells you basically isolated from team defense how much a guy is contributing or hurting a team, and he's rates out really bad in that. I don't know how much that is due to the fact that he's just guarding bigger guys and whatnot, but I don't think that is helping him, obviously. Again, against Lauri Markkanen, I thought he did a commendable job. You saw a guy who is learning, who is getting better at this, and who's a smart defender. I feel very encouraged by the fact that he wasn't blown away by Markkanen, because I had very low expectations for that. But we don't really know what kind of defender he is, because he's guarding fours, and he should be probably guarding twos and threes, and smaller threes at that. Like, he should not be guarding LeBron-type threes or Paul George. Like, he should be guarding guys like Oladipo, guys like Beal. Like, that's the size of guy he really should be guarding. You've heard me talk about it if you listen to the show. You've heard, I think it's just an obvious fact about this team. Colin Sexton's going to benefit from a really healthy roster, but Jetty Osman is too. He is going to benefit, I think, a lot from David Nwaba being back, because in that circumstance, if they can pair them together, and maybe Drew will be reluctant to, because he'll want to have Jetty guarding some better guys, some of the other good scorers, because he trusts him to be a defender. And I don't think that's unreasonable. But if Nwaba is back and he could guard bigger guys, that's really going to help. If he can take on, you know, because Nwaba is just built and he's strong and he can handle the bigger post of guys. Look what he did against Harden, who's very strong, and LeBron, and etc. If Jetty can guard a guy who's a little bit smaller, maybe still very dangerous and good, but a little bit smaller and not quite as bruising, because of Nwaba's presence alone, that is really going to help him. That's going to help him get more comfortable in the role he's ideally going to play when this team is fully formed, and maybe as early as next season. Interestingly, according to Basketball Reference, is lineup data, among their 10 most tracked two-man lineups, the Nwaba-Osman pairing is a negative at negative 3.1 points per 100 possessions, but that is Osman's best two-man duo on the season. It has played about 160 minutes together, so that's not a ton. That's a little less than four total games, but that's his best two-man duo. His next one is George Hill, which obviously George Hill is not on the team anymore, and then you get into him and Thompson, which is all the rest of them below the Hill-Osman pairing are worse than 10 points together per 100 possessions. Him and Nwaba together, there's something there that is at least, it's not necessarily good, but it is not as much of a disaster as some of the other ones. So I would like to see him playing back with David Nwaba. I don't love, I do not love two big lineups in this NBA. I think they leave you schematically in trouble against teams that are going to play smaller and play quicker and play pace and space, etc. But the Cavs are in a position where if they get a healthy roster, and so that means Larry Nance is back, Kevin Love is back, Thompson's back, and their whole roster is playing. If they just want to say, we're going to play our best talent, we're going to play our most talented guys, regardless of size, and just try to make it work, two big lineups are going to be reality. I think when this roster is fully healthy, especially because the season has to be about developing youth, Zizic, Nance, Love, and Thompson all have to play. I don't love that. I think it's going to have some real issues. We're going to see data and film that is going to tell us that. But it will help Jetty, because I think if they can have two bigs on the floor, if Larry Nance and let's say you're going to go Thompson and Love together to start, and then you have Nance and Zizic together, I think is probably what ends up happening, especially if Nance can shoot. That'll kind of unlock some of this and make it more tolerable. It'll make it more easier pill to swallow. But that would allow Jetty to go play the three. That would allow Jetty to go guard twos and threes instead of fours and getting bigger, bulkier guys. Look, this is not going to give us a perfect picture of what Jetty is. I give him, again, a ton of credit for really guarding bigger guys and handling it and not complaining about it and getting better at it and getting smarter about it. I think the Markkanen cover is at least somewhat of that. And I need to go back and watch the Nuggets game and the Jazz game if I just feel like watching something that is not going to be fun, to kind of get a better picture of that and how he did against Favors and Millsap. But I think if he can get back to guarding smaller guys, that is only going to help him. And I think the Cavs getting healthy is only going to help Jetty because it can put him in a more natural position. Maybe a year from now, he's 6'8 and he's 230 because he spends the summer really putting on muscle. I think his summer work is going to be really, really important. I think his building his body is going to be really important. But for now, I think getting him back to guarding smaller guys is only going to help him. So that is going to be it for today's show. We are going to be back tomorrow with a preview of Wednesday's Cavs-Celtics game. And I'm going to look up some positive things, some things I feel good about, and talk through some of them for you for Wednesday's show. If you have questions you want answered for the next mailbag show, you can, as always, submit those to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. There will also be a post up in a day or two before we record that over on r/ClevelandCavs if you want to submit your questions there. A 5-star review on Apple Podcasts does guarantee your question gets answered. And after the sword, check out our 2-for-1 written by me for Cavs Bulls and all of our game coverage. Check out Trevor Magnotti's draft viewing guide for the week if you want to watch some college basketball and get excited for the future as opposed to focusing on the incredibly crappy product that you're watching now. But with the trade deadline coming up as well, we're going to have a ton of coverage there too in tracking all the rumors and everything as they pop up. And it's about to start heating up, I would think, with a little under 3 weeks to go before we get to the deadline. So thank you for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for January 22nd, 2019. I'm Chris Manning. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWMWrights. We will talk to you tomorrow.